brothers and sisters. Welcome to the 8th episode of Racks, Fur, and Feathers. Today was just us dudes. It was just me, Ray, Adam, and we talked a little everything. A little bear hunting, a little mushroom hunting, a little fly fishing. We had a great time. I think you guys are going to pull a little bit of something out of this too. So, without further ado, here we go. Episode 8, people.
So, you brought this little turkey thing back with you, huh?
Yeah, I figured it'd be easier to talk about it if we had it right here in front of us, so.
What we are talking about is me, Adam, and Ray yesterday went out shed hunting out behind Ray's house. And we found a turkey leg with the spur on it. That'd be, what, the femur?
I think so, yeah. It's pretty cool, man. I've never seen a spur actually on the bone like that, down to the bone, so we picked it up. I didn't really know what it was at first. I thought, what the hell is this little, like a little antler growing on the side of a bone? And then I realized it was a turkey leg, and probably the result of coyote.
Yeah, drug it off. It was kind of by a swampy area. That's where they like to hang out. So I'm hoping you guys listening have been out looking for some sheds. The weather's been perfect for it, man. All the snow's gone now. We actually have seen some sunshine for a while.
Yeah, what was it, 2 weeks ago we got all that rain?
Yeah, and, yeah. Well, first we had all the snow, and then we had a shit ton of rain.
Right.
While the snow was melting, so everybody was underwater there for a minute.
Now it's finally kind of leveled out a little bit,
yeah,
dried out.
Yeah, it seems like we always have like a permacloud from like November to April.
Yeah.
End of April.
Yeah, that winter.
It's like you never see the sun, man. It gets a little depressing, but it's been nice the last couple of days. Yesterday it was like mid-40s.
Yeah, it was perfect. A little chilly right first thing in the morning, but by the end of the day, I think it got up to 45 or 46, something like that, and the sun shined all day. It was just
perfect day to go out for a walk looking for some sheds, man.
A good day to spend some time in the woods.
We didn't find any. All we found was that turkey, but
it was still a good walk.
It's too bad we had to cut it short.
Right. Right. Yeah, You've have found sheds out here before, though. You found that?
Yeah. When I wasn't looking for them, I was just out for a walk and like, oh shit, what is that? I'd walk under a tree and they were actually both sitting there.
Matching set. That's awesome.
Yep.
Yeah, those are hard to find. We were actually just watching a video of a mule deer dropping its set.
Oh, yeah?
Both of them at the same time. He was running away and they got it on camera. It was pretty sweet.
That's cool. That'd be cool to see. I wouldn't think that's, how hard do you have to work to catch that little 10 or 15 seconds? On film.
Yeah, they slowed it down and watched it fall off. It was pretty sweet.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, it's a perfect weather. Get out, grab your kid, just go for a walk in the woods. It's a good opportunity to do some scouting, too.
Right.
We noticed a couple of heavy runs that, you get, it's a good, because if you bump them, no big deal.
Right, yeah, there's no need to worry about, spooking them off this time of year. There's no hunting season. The most you're going to do is inconvenience them. So,
right.
And, get a glimpse of it yourself. It's pretty cool to see a deer in the wild. Just, you don't have to hunt for them to appreciate seeing them.
So. Right. And you could see a lot of old sign too. Like we ran across a lot of old scrapes, old rubs. So, where them bucks are hanging out, where,
Absolutely.
A place where you normally wouldn't go walking during the season. It's kind of cool to get in there afterwards. Like, oh, all right. They've been.
Yeah. Yeah. It helps to kind of get a better idea about where they're moving through.
Especially in a new area that you're not used to.
Absolutely.
But you've been hunting out here for 2 years, but
yep.
We're still kind of getting an idea where they're moving,
oh, yeah.
It's a lot of fun, and it's my favorite time to be in the woods just in general, because there's no bugs.
Yeah.
It's not too goddamn hot, and you can see.
No flies, no mosquitoes.
No leaves on the trees.
There's no vegetation in your way. It's early enough that a lot of the plants haven't started to regrow yet, so everything's kind of bare, and you just get sort of a good naked view of the woods. Well, it's very much alive still. It just hasn't fully blossomed into what it's going to be in the spring or in the summer.
Right, and it's a good opportunity. What I like to do is, I readjust the straps on my stand.
Yeah.
Or, loosen it up. And I usually do that twice. I'll do it in the spring and then do it, just before the season, because the tree's going to grow a little bit, obviously, during spring and summer. But to cut your lanes. It's a lot easier to see where you want to cut your new shooting lanes, or if you want to change something up in your stand, turn your stand.
It's easier to trim a branch that's not covered in leaves,
Exactly.
It's a lot easier to see where it's going, what you're doing. You could cut it back a little bit farther, give it room to grow out in the summer, and still leave yourself a pretty fantastic shooting lane, if you anticipate the way that it's going to grow.
Right, right. So. And, being out there, it's great to bring your kids out, because you're not trying to be quiet. You're
right,
not trying to, pursue anything. You're just kind of going for a walk.
And you never know what you're going to see. I mean, it's always, you know, something new, something exciting.
Like
there's
that
always,
turkey leg. That thing was cool, man.
Yeah, unique things
seen
that
before.
You're not going to find just sitting on the couch or, you know, sitting in your chair staring at a computer screen. You know, it's a good activity. Get you outside a little bit, get some fresh air. And
one thing I did notice from the difference in you from today than yesterday is Mr. Mustachio has a curl in his stash now.
Yeah. It took about three
fucking
months,
A,
but
man.
It finally got long enough again to curl it up a little bit. So
I like it.
He's back.
It's all, yeah. I was looking through my phone earlier, like that doe I shot this year, and a fucking mustache is like halfway up my face. I forget how big it was then, but I'm happy it's back.
So what made you decide to grow a mustache like that?
Honestly, boredom.
Facial hair boredom?
Yeah. Well, I got laid off in the winter, as I do. I work at a gravel pit, so in the wintertime, we don't do a whole lot, and I usually get a couple weeks off. Because I had the time off, I didn't worry about going anywhere, trying to impress anybody. I just didn't shave for, like, probably 2 or 3 months. By the end of it, I had a pretty grizzly-looking face. not really a beard to speak of.
A little patchy?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a baseball beard. I got 9 hairs on each side.
Joe Dute.
My family's not known for growing facial hair necessarily, so I ended up with quite the mustache, which I never could grow coming up in high school or even like in my early 20s. I had a hell of a time. And the only thing I could ever grow is this little cookie duster here under the lip. And so I just happened to have it long enough that I decided to fuck around with it. When I was staring at myself in the mirror, I just gave it a twist one night and curled up one side, and I thought, oh, that's all right. You know, see if I can do it to the other side. And it's a pain
different.
In the ass. Yeah, it really is. But once you get it, I guess once it kind of learns.
It learns?
Yeah, you have to train it, yeah. Right? So
that's hilarious.
It takes a lot of time looking in the mirror.
It's awesome because every time somebody's at the house, you know, and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm doing the show with Adam. You
right.
Know. Who's Adam? I'm like, oh, he's the guy with the mustache, remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I get that a lot when I shaved for that first week. You know, I'd go to, like, the liquor store or whatever, and I'd walk in, and they'd card me. I'd be like, hey, you guys see me all the time. I just used to have a really big mustache. And the look on their face when they, you know, put together, they're used to seeing me with this giant curl, you know. Whatever, and I guess that sort of became what people known me for. So,
yeah, fucking hey, man. We had a good time yesterday. But one thing we were talking about in the morning, though, I was telling Ray about how much different it is down here as opposed to in Baldwin where we hunt.
Yeah,
in the mornings when the sun comes up, like down here, there's so many species of birds.
Okay,
that when the sun comes up, it's chatter
like
everywhere, you know.
Of course.
Even with all the noise pollution from the cars and you know, highways or whatever, it's still so loud. Up there, it's like the sun comes up, nothing.
Yeah.
Dead quiet. There's no cars, no noise pollution, or birds.
Right.
I thought that was really strange. And another thing I noticed is there's a lot of black phase gray squirrels. Black squirrels are not their own species of squirrel.
Correct, yeah. A lot of people
get that confused.
Like to talk about squirrels. There's a fox squirrel, and there's a gray squirrel, there's a black squirrel, and there's a red squirrel. And there's not actually a difference between the black and the gray squirrel other than it's the color phase.
Color phase, exactly.
So a black squirrel is actually a gray squirrel that just is in a darker color cycle.
Right,
so,
just like you would see a black coyote, or occasionally
right.
You see a black deer with like a melon, something or other, melanic. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know. No.
I've seen it posted online. I don't know. There's a word for it, but yeah, and another difference between down here and up there is the size, too.
Right.
Those black squirrels up there, man, look like fucking black bear cubs.
Yeah.
I was sitting in my... I'm serious, dude. They're huge, you know? And I think that's got a lot to do with Bergman's principle, which is mammals tend to be larger on the northern fringe of their territory.
Okay.
Heat dissipation, you know, just... They tend to be large. You know, you hear about all these huge deer up in Alberta, for instance.
They grow a lot bigger on the edge of their traditional territory. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's colder.
Right.
So they're, you know, bigger.
I would imagine that there's probably less competition in those areas. The deer that do live up there probably do better because not as many deer could survive in that area.
know, yeah, like what we were talking with Popsy about the deer that migrate. And right. We said that, you know, the ones I see from the Porkies coming down, they're just a bigger animal. I mean, right. Like noticeable difference. They're just, they're huge. And you know, the thing with like ears too, like the woolly mammoths had tiny little ears, and then the elephants have big old fat ears, right. And like mule deer have. On the southern fringe of their territory, tend to have larger ears.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's got something to do with heat dissipation. That doesn't really apply to the squirrels, other than. But
right.
Yeah. No. It's nuts. It makes me curious, like what it would sound like down here. You know, if you can get to a spot where there wasn't as much noise pollution, and it doesn't really matter where you go down here in Southwest Michigan, you're gonna catch some highway noise.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of roads and a lot of traffic. But it's like being in the woods first thing in the morning. You know, you tend to hear a lot more of those birds. And it's the blue jays, the cardinals, the songbirds, the robins sometimes. Not so much in the wintertime. Sparrows. What are the other birds? Like finches or starlings, things like that. Those are more of a summer bird. But we have a lot more diversity down here, I'd say, as opposed to what they have up north. But they probably have...
Why do you think that is?
I would guess climate, maybe. I don't know. Just
agriculture? Because I know, like, up by Baldwin, there's not a whole... You don't see cornfields or grain fields.
Yeah, it's a lot more forest.
Yeah, well, on the way there, like, I think it's right around the Grand Rapids area, you see a lot of fruit orchards, apple orchards.
Yeah.
But up by Baldwin, I don't think there's really much of anything up there. I think the majority of their diet is just, acorns.
And that might be why there's not as many birds up there. You know, conditions aren't ideal for them to thrive like they are down here. We have a lot more agriculture, even just small, you know, backyard gardens, things like that.
Well, how many people feed birds? You know,
bird feeders everywhere. That's true too. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, that's crazy. And we were talking while we were on our little adventure yesterday. Yeah. We were talking about your blackbird hunt.
Yeah.
Where was that at again?
In Nipigon, Ontario.
And you said that was what was the outfitter that
did
that?
It was through Nipigon River Outfitters. And the guy's name is Bob Behrman, ironically. He runs like a hotel, basically, in the town of Nipigon. And he manages a couple bait sites on some state land that he, you know, give the man some money. He shows you where to go and what to do, and you go bear hunting.
So it's not like he's sitting there with you, like your hand the entire time.
The most he did for us was tell us that we could use some of the pre-mixed bait that he had. And we actually brought like 5 or 6 cardboard 55-gallon drums of like day-old donuts. My grandpa spent most of the summer picking up donuts from the dumpster at like Krispy Kreme and places like that. Yeah, it was...
What did you work out a deal with him?
Yeah, they basically just gave him all the old donuts
because
he told them that he could use them for bear bait. And they said, sure, take as many as you want, you know. So he did. And we got to help him load in like August. Just disgusting amounts of sweet, heavy.
Sugary, puts you in a diabetic coma.
Oh my God. And it stank so bad.
They love that shit.
They do. Yeah. Well, we found out when we got up there that it actually, the bait that we brought, they were less interested in because they weren't exposed to it. The bait that he was using was like a mixture of like trail mix, cake frosting, granola, maybe some peanuts or something. And they were more interested in what he was offering because that's just what they were used to. We put the stuff that we brought in the bait barrels, and it seemed like the bears...
Like it spooked them a bit?
Yeah, like they just weren't used to it, so they didn't come into it.
You know, deer tend to do that, too, I've noticed. Because we used to go to the feed mill here in town, and we get a fruit powder. I think they use it for hogs on some of their feed.
Okay.
I don't ask me why. But you'd get it in this, like... it'd come in, like, a 1-pound butcher paper-type bag.
Okay.
And we just sprinkle a little bit on our corn if we started baiting like a new spot, or if, you know, just because every like opening morning or something,
right?
We just drop a little bit just to put the smell out. We thought it would bring them in,
mm-hmm.
But every deer that always came in after we did that, it was sketchy as shit. Like it was like, what is going on? Like something's not right.
Yeah, it could tell that there was something kind of different to it.
Right. So we obviously quit doing it.
Yeah, actually, halfway through the week that we were up there, my brother quit using the donuts that we brought and actually got some of the food from the outfitter himself. But it was like a half-hour drive just to get back to the hotel where he was. My grandpa had been up there before. He'd never gone through this guy before, so it was kind of a new experience for the three of us. But it was really cool. He put us in contact with a man that had a cabin back in the middle of the state land. Don't ask me how. It was nuts. Basically, you drive down a two-track for like 20, 25 minutes in four-wheel drive because you had to have it. And when you got back to this little clearing in the woods where there was like a stick-built cabin, not much bigger than this room. And that's where we stayed for the week, isolated. You know, if anything happened to us, we were basically screwed. Right. Our cell phones didn't work up there. The most you could use them for was like a clock or a compass. So yeah, it was awesome.
Everybody filled their tag?
No, actually, I'm the only one that ended up filling my tag. And it's funny.
You said you filled it pretty quick, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the first night. I'd never been bear hunting before, so the first bear that come into the bait barrel, I realized was big enough to shoot because it stood up and it was taller than the 55-gallon drum. And I thought, well, there's my bear.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but just no, before ahead. We go into that, we should probably... You can't shoot, you said, a wet sow.
Right. You're not allowed to hunt and harvest a mother with cubs.
Right. So you can shoot a sow, but she can't have cubs.
Right. Yeah. You can shoot a female, but it can't be a female that has cubs with her.
Or
basically.
Male.
Yeah.
And you any size.
Yep. Yep. There's no size limit. You can shoot a bear. You can shoot a cub if you want to.
Which nobody's gonna do, but.
Yeah. Some people do.
Right.
I didn't. Mine wasn't a big bear, but it was definitely not a cub still. So
right.
And
well, 55 gallon drum, man. It's...
It was a good size. It was probably 150, 170 pounds, something like that. Mm-hmm. It was probably a first year bear, I'd say.
And yeah, and you never shot a bear before, so
I'd never been bear hunting. Yeah, I never shot a bear. So I was happy just to fill my tag.
I was gonna say, I doubt you were being very picky.
No. And it's funny because my grandpa and my brother were with me. They gave me a hard time about it all the way up until the end of the week when neither one of them filled their tag. And I was the only one going home with a bear. And I said, well, you know, you can say it's a small bear if you want to, but it's a bear.
Well, you know, there's an old saying, don't pass on something the first day that you'd be happy to have on the last
exactly.
day.
Exactly. And they got to they got to learn that lesson the hard way that time. So.
Right. Yeah, Ethan learned his lesson the hard way this year with deer hunting. So. Yeah, so we were talking to a guy last night at this gun raffle we went to.
Uh-huh.
He's a taxidermist, and he was talking about he found a special trick for bear skulls.
Yeah.
He was talking about how fatty they were.
Right.
And he said what he does is he boils them in water and Dawn dish soap. He said once he figured that out, for European mounts.
Right, yeah. Right,
it just made me curious. Did you do your... bear skull, or what did you do anything with it?
I actually, yeah, I got the European mount at my house. I had Bud Ramft, classical taxidermy, just a couple houses down from where I live on Lake Street there. He did mine for me, and it was like $130. He put it on a real nice oak stand. European mount looks good.
Did you skin it out before that, or you just
did
the whole thing?
No, I took the skin off of it when we butchered it up there at the camp, because I had a whole week after I killed my bear to actually not do anything. You know, I was done hunting. I had the time to cut my bear up. So I pretty much processed it myself up there and just took back bags of meat already cleaned up. So I skinned it myself and I had intentions of making a bear skin rug with it. That didn't actually happen, unfortunately, because of conditions that were out of my control at the time. I ended up taking it to my mom's house. She had a deep freeze that she put it in. And throughout the course of my stepdad doing some construction work at the house and just the fact that she wanted to thaw out her deep freeze, my bear skin got frozen, thawed out, frozen again, thawed out, and then frozen again. So by the time it got to the taxidermist, it was ruined. That's why basically settled for a European mount because that's the only thing I could get out of it, out of the whole cape and head and everything else. So,
was there any trouble? This was in Canada. So was there any issues bringing anything back over the border, or they didn't even bother?
No, actually coming back into America was the smoothest, easiest, most comfortable process there was. Getting into Canada was tough.
With the weapons?
With the weapons and just with the border guards being dicks, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Everybody in Canada, first of all, is just super nice. Everybody up there is, anything you ever heard about Canadians being the most friendly people on the planet is true.
You know, oh, yeah. I spent some time in Windsor when...
Yeah, they're cool. Most friendly, helpful people there are. The people that work for the Border Patrol, apparently, are not Canadians or just some special breed of asshole.
Really?
Yeah. We pull up to the little, it's like going into a state park, sort of, where you come up to like a guard shack, basically. And you could either just pass right by it, you know, tell them what you're there for, what you're doing, get through and be cool. Or they can decide to ask you to pull up into a little special parking area where they get to check out your shit. That's what happened to us. I was driving my truck. We were pulling a trailer with two four-wheelers, like five or six 55-gallon drums of donuts. And, like, you know, all our camping stuff, our tents and the canopy that we used, just cans of gas, things like that, stuff you normally take with you. So we pull up to the thing, and the guy says, you know, welcome to Canada. What are you guys doing? Where are you going? We tell him that we're bear hunting, and the guy looks at and sees our trailer and goes, well, what's in those 55-gallon drums? My grandpa goes, donuts for bears. And he said, is the food fit for human consumption? And my grandpa goes, no, not really, because they're garbage donuts. Like, people wouldn't eat it. And he goes, the border guy goes, we don't want anything on our soil that's not fit for human consumption. So I have a problem with you guys bringing that stuff in. Basically, go ahead and pull up here into this little area and we'll check you out. You guys got guns too? We said, yeah, we're going bear hunting. Of course, we got guns. Well, we'll have to check them out too. Do you have the proper paperwork for it? And we didn't know that you had to fill out a form to get a gun from America into Canada. Not that it would have been a problem.
What is it, does it make a difference if it's a pistol or a rifle?
I'm pretty sure pistols are illegal in Canada. So
really?
It would definitely make a difference. I don't think you can have handguns up there. So basically, they just want to check like registration numbers, make, model, make sure it's not stolen.
Oh, okay.
So
make sure you're not bringing a fully automatic.
Right. So they took us in, and they weren't as bad as they could have been. I guess they could have decided just to search my entire truck and trailer, top to bottom, in and out, if they wanted to. But, you know, it was my grandpa with two of his grandkids going on a bear hunt. We're not going up there to, like, smuggle drugs or whatever, you know, do illegal shit. So they gave us a hard time there, kept us for about 45 minutes, gave us a bunch of questions and shit, and then after we paid like $25 a piece to get our guns into Canada, they let us go on our way. And the rest of the trip was great. Coming back into America, all they asked me, because I had a bear, I had to declare that I had killed a bear, and I had to fill out a form, sign a piece of paper. I don't even think I had to pay anything for it. I just told them I had it, and they said, cool, check my tags, let us go.
Now, after you harvested the bear, did they make you check it in anywhere? Like a Canadian version of a DNR check station or anything?
Technically, I think that we were supposed to bring it back to the outfitter, and he was supposed to pull a tooth out of the bear to see how old it was, you know, all the information they learned from the teeth. Because you do have to fill out a form at the end of your hunting trip. You have to report to the outfitter how many bears you actually saw, not just the ones that were at the bait barrel or whatever. If you're driving down the trail and you see a bear, you have to let them know about it so that they can make the report to whatever
agency.
The DNR, Canadian, whatever. And that's how they kind of keep track of the bears that they have up there.
Did you have to do anything special right after you shot it? Like, I know in some states out west, like when you harvest something, you have to leave some identity of sex, like leave a nut.
No.
Do you have to do anything like that?
No. I just told the outfitter, you know, I told him it was a smaller female bear. I told him it was probably a year old. You know, I gave him the size, the length, basically. And he said, okay, that's all he needed. So that was it. If you do give them the tooth, they send it off to whatever agency checks out the tooth. And then, like, a couple months later, you'll get a letter in the mail telling you all the information about the bear that you killed. And it'll say, you know, this is what we learned from the tooth that you gave us. Basically, it's just their way of following up with you to give right. you know, information about your kill and sort of encourage you to come back and do it again. I think at the time, I might still have it with me. I think it was like $350 for a bear tag.
Really?
There. Yeah, it was pretty salty.
That's pretty expensive. Well, it's like $800, I think, in Montana for an out-of-state elk tag.
Yeah, you can't hardly read it now. That was my...
Yeah, it's pretty worn out.
Yeah.
It's cool, though. Check that out. Yeah, well, we were talking yesterday about... Because I've never been black bear hunting. Ray's never been.
Right.
I know a bunch of people that do it. They usually go to the UP, the ones I know.
Right.
And it seems like if you're going to do it up there, it's almost impossible to do it without somebody baiting for you for a couple months or a couple weeks ahead of time. Or unless you're going to get out there and, like we talked before about how they run bear with dogs, you can hire an outfitter to hook you up with some dogs and run out. But the kind of bear hunting I want to do would be more like a spot and stalk, you know?
Right. And that
you need wide open space for that. And it's so thick up in the UP, you can't.
The bears are the masters of their domain. they can move through that thick stuff a lot better than you or I could. And the nature of a bear, in my experience, is that they get up, they go find food, and then they get some water or something, they go back to, you know, bed. They don't do a lot of exploring around. Most of what they're doing is either hunting for food, looking for water, or going to sleep.
Right, so, right. Yeah, and up there, it's so, you know, if you're hunting them in the spring, right. There's leaves on the trees, it's almost impossible to see.
Right.
And you know, and in the upper lower peninsula, there's a decent bear population, but the tags aren't nearly as easy to get as they are in the UP.
There's a point system for that, right?
Yep.
Every year you buy into, you get a point for like, what was it, $10, $15 or something?
I think it's like $5 to apply or $10 to apply for the license to go in the drawing. And then if you don't draw a tag, it'll
roll over, right?
Well,
yep. You'll earn a bonus point, and if you do it again next year and don't get it, you'll get another bonus point.
Right, because I think every year my grandpa buys a point for his license. I've been buying bear points for a while just to have them, you know, just in case I ever decide to go bear hunting. If I got 8 or 9 points, I'm guaranteed to get a tag, you know, and I won't have to worry about it. So, plus, it's money that goes to the Michigan Department of Natural Resources.
It's a good kind of fair way to do it, because even when you earn points, exponentially, where it like doubles, like the second year you go in, you get 3 bonus points, like you get.
I'm not sure how that works.
Or maybe it's just one every time. I don't remember, but it seemed like after a while you start to earn more than one point when you apply or something like that.
Huh.
But it's a pretty fair way to do it.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. It really allows the guys that are genuinely interested in it to invest some time and some money into getting ready. You know, you don't buy a bear point and then just decide to go bear hunting on a weekend. You know, it's something you generally plan for. So, you know, it gives you, I guess, a goal when you start buying your bear points that you know that eventually you'll go on a bear hunt. So you want to start preparing yourself for the bear hunt by getting whatever gun you're going to shoot, sight it in, mm-hmm. you know, get your camouflage in order.
Your donuts out of the garbage.
Well, yeah, if you're doing the donuts like we did, which
right.
I don't think he's even done that since then. I think that was the one time he learned his lesson, and he doesn't mess with picking up nasty donuts anymore.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
That's the nature of bear hunting, though. Like, if you don't bait them, if you don't get them coming into bait consistently, they're really hard to find. They're really hard to figure out, and they're really fast, really smart. They don't see great, but they hear and they smell amazingly. So,
yeah, deer the same way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to start looking into that a little bit more. You know, I want to start maybe planning a trip one of these years. Take the kids like on their senior year or something. Let them take some time off school in September. And
you know what would be great?
Out west
is if we got together and went up there and did that sometime. You know, I think it was like $2,000. That's truck gas, food,
yeah,
tags, everything. You know,
oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, because, you know, I was saying earlier about how I like to, what I want to do is the spot and stalk style.
Yeah, yep.
You know, what we can do with that is turkey down here. I mean, all these, oak savannas, you want to call them? All these rolling hills and wide open space out by where we hunt off of, on the, what it would be, the west side of Buchanan.
Okay.
Yeah, dude, that seems like a lot of fun. Last year, I didn't get to go out. But like two times for turkey.
You're going to be one of those guys with the big turkey fan out there hiding behind
I don't know.
Creeping up.
Just the calling aspect is what really turns me on about it.
Yeah.
Because that's one of my favorite parts about hunting whitetail is getting in the tree stand and hitting the call, doing the rambling sequence and working them, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And that's what really has turned me on about the turkey hunt, but I don't know how to do it well yet.
Right.
So I'm still like learning as I go, you know. But, yeah, that I'm really looking forward to that this year. I forgot to apply for my damn license because I thought you had till March 1st to put in, you know, the $5 or whatever. So I'm late on that. But like last year, there was plenty of leftover licenses. So
right.
But last year I screwed up too because there's three seasons. There's a April, like last year was like April 17th to 23rd.
Yep.
And then April 24th to the end of the month. And then the whole month of May.
Right.
Well, I did the whole month of May because I'm like, well, shit. I'm
thinking you'd have more time.
Right, right. And it turns out it didn't. Still only made it out twice. Yeah. But, it, you know, it's like the rut. You know, it's hot. For about 2 weeks, those birds are making all kinds of noise, and they're just running rampant.
And when they set those dates for the season, they don't have any idea, you know, what environmental factor is going to be taking into effect, you know, what controls the rut for a turkey. It might be hot the first week. It might be hot the last week of May. You don't know. So you took a chance in the biggest window that you were provided and still, you know.
And I'll tell you, it felt weird. Oh, man, it felt weird. Like, it being out in camo with a bow in the spring just didn't feel right.
Right.
It felt like I was definitely doing something wrong. But but after a while, you kind of get past that. And I just
It's just hunting in a different season. It'd be like going down to Florida in the middle of December and going fishing, you know, it wouldn't feel right because it's damn near Christmas time and I'm standing here in shorts and a t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly. It was just
fishing.
Well, I was on the ground and I was hitting the call for a while and nothing was coming in. So I just kind of sat there, was zoning out. I think I was reading a book actually, and I glanced up and had a little buck walking in.
All right.
Grabbed my bow, got out. Oh, wait. That's not what we're doing. That's not what we're doing here.
Different season.
Right, yeah, but it just the whole thing just felt kind of foreign. But I'm really looking forward to it this year, you know, because I definitely screwed up on the season choice because I remember I was fishing on Singer Lake.
Yeah.
Just trying to get some gills. And, you know, that kind of, if anybody listening to this is familiar with that lake, it kind of sits in a big bowl. You know, there's just hills all the way around you, and I could hear them turkeys out there gobbling.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really peaceful and cool, but at the same time it pissed me off because I'm like, well,
frustrating
shit. Like, that's when it kind of hit me, like, I am definitely gonna
have to go miss turkey hunting.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna miss when it's hot, you know, because you know, every day I was getting on faceplant and there was this, you know, everybody's holding up their turkeys,
right?
And then, you know, you see less and less and less as April goes on, and then by the time the May season hits, I'm like, oh shit, you know, they're done. And it's hot,
yeah,
you know, and that's when the ticks are on full blast.
Oh, so. Yeah.
But it did give me an opportunity to start looking for some morels, though, that, you know.
That's a double duty there, you know, go out turkey hunting and see if you can find some morels. That's not
a bad
plan.
That's just around the corner, ladies.
That's right, yeah.
Probably about the time this drops, everybody should be out looking for those.
Mushroom season is fast approaching. This year, man, is flying by. I can't believe it's March already.
Already, yeah.
I remember just yesterday it was Christmas, and now my work's firing up full time. There's more cars on the road. People are going out, doing things. Industry's picking up, man. Another year is is starting to crank up, and
which means we're that much more closer to the fall.
Absolutely, yeah. Every day that goes by is one day closer to deer season. Or...
Hell yeah, I plan on doing a lot more fishing this year. You know, because me and Ray, our kids are in travel ball.
We say that every year, but
right. Every year we just end up getting so busy. I know there's a lot of people listening to this probably have the same issue. You know, because we used to fish a lot.
Yeah, I did too when I was like in high school and I had more time to do nothing or to do everything. We talked about that yesterday. Being an adult was a lot cooler sounding when you were a kid. You know, when I grow up, I'm going to get to do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it. As soon as I get done going to work and paying the bills and making dinner for myself and, you know, taking care of the kids and.
Well, shit, let's go out and have a good time. I got 30 minutes and $5, you know?
Yeah. That's, we take what we can get now, but that...
But yeah, but it's now, don't get me wrong. We both love watching our boys play.
Oh, absolutely.
And Chloe and Stella and volleyball and softball. Yeah, yeah. I love it, but even, you know, when they were younger, travel ball wasn't a thing.
Right.
Yet, so it was a lot easier to find time for that. Now it's like every single weekend we got something going on.
And that makes the time that you get out that
especially
much more special.
Summer. Yeah, you know, exactly.
You appreciate it a lot more when you don't get to do it as often. Not saying I wouldn't like to do it a whole lot more often, but...
Well, that's the thing. You know, Singer Lake is one of my favorite lakes to go on just for the fact that it's small. So there's not a lot of boats out there on a Saturday ripping and romping and causing all kinds of hell.
Yep.
It's nice and quiet. It's peaceful. And you can go out there and rip lips all evening on bills, you know. There's plenty of bass out there.
Yeah.
And they actually stock that with trout, so I've heard.
Huh.
Rainbows, yep.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, it's pretty damn deep in the middle of that lake, too.
It would have to be. Where is Singer Lake? Is that up?
Out by Baroda.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're going Shawnee and then take a right on, I think it's, shit, there's a little road right there by the vet clinic. Take a right and then.
Way out there.
Yeah, it's out there.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I'm definitely planning on doing a little bit more of that. And another thing I want to do is definitely get out on the big lake.
I know... Every year for the last couple of years on the 4th of July, my buddy Jason takes us out on his boat. We always go out, Tiffany and I and his significant other, and spend the day trolling for lake trout, king salmon,
steelhead. When we say the big lake, we're talking Lake Michigan.
That's right.
The big lake.
The big sea and the little Michigan here.
Right, yeah. Eric Fisher, who's we've recorded a couple episodes at his house.
Mm-hmm.
He used to have a boat and he used to do that all the time and he got rid of it and he keeps saying, he's like, God damn it, I'm gonna get another one and we're gonna go in the summer.
Yeah.
And like I said, man, just give me a couple days notice and we'll hit it up. I'm really looking forward to that because some of the best eaten fish comes out of the big lake.
It can go one way or the other out there usually. Either it's dead and you troll for hours and hours and hours and you don't do anything but drink beer and eat chips and wish that the bite was on, or when the bite's on, it's, you know, it's so hectic. You're trying to dodge waves. You're trying to dodge other boats. You're trying to fight one, two, three, sometimes four fish at a time. And it...
Perch fishing, yeah. You're talking trolling. But even perch fishing, though, because you can have it rigged up to be pulling two at a time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Perch fishing's a lot of fun, too.
It's got to be pretty still for that, though.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a lot better when it's flat. Trolling, it can be as rough as you want to be out in. Given the conditions and the boat that you got. So I know we've trolled in like 4 to 5 footers before. That's not a fun time, man. That is not fun at all.
Pucker up your butthole a little bit.
Constantly.
Yeah.
definitely we need to get out and do that this summer.
Fucking A. Maybe take some videos while we're out there and put them to the page. And
yeah, and see if we can get more people interested in doing that, because that's...
Well, one of the easiest things you can do... related to the big lake is head to the mouth of the river right there. Cast out and I mean that's a good spot to catch all kinds of shit.
Yeah, up in New Buffalo. When we were 15 or 16 years old, a group of us was fishing up there at the mouth of the river there where it flows into the lake. And it was my buddy Jason, my friend Brian and I, and the three of us were fishing. It was cold. I think it was later in the season. I don't think it was snowing, but it was cold enough that it could have. We're all in high school, whatever, just killing some time up there. And there happened to be an ambulance that came up and parked in the parking lot there and was watching us fish or tend to our lines. My friend Brian got a bite, set the hook on a fish, lost it immediately. Re-rigged whatever, put his line back out. I was fishing right to the left side of him. I get a bite. I hook the fish. I bring it in. It's like a 10-pound brown trout. It's just a football. I mean, this thing is beautiful. And in the corner of its mouth is my buddy's hook.
Yeah.
Where he didn't tie a good knot. When he set the hook, the knot came untied. So I gave him his hook back. And then the people in the ambulance actually got on their loudspeaker and said, hold it up for us. We want to see it. So I got to kind of rub it in his face a little bit and hold up this nice brown trout cool. to these ambulance people. And that was a tasty fish, too.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
took
awesome.
Him home, threw him in some tin foil with some onions and butter, and, grilled him.
Butter Crisco?
If in a pinch, yes.
Right. So did you ever get into fly fishing?
I fly fished one time. It's another fun story. I was fishing with my friend Jason. It was like 2006 or 2007. There was a collegiate fishing tournament that was put on by a couple guys at Michigan State, but it involved people from Kalamazoo, from Western up to Central. It was like the whole, pretty much the center of Michigan was in this collegiate steelhead tournament, and it was up in Baldwin, but you had your choice. You know, you could fish anywhere in Baldwin. You know, it would start at like noon on a Saturday, and then by like 7 o'clock that night, you had to report back to the Pier Marquette Lodge. I think it's still the Pier Marquette Lodge there. But they had an Orvis fly shop too. On a fluke, I went with them. So I was seeing a girl at the time that was in Ann Arbor. So I drove from East Lansing to Ann Arbor to spend Friday night with her. Got up on Friday night or Friday morning. Friday night we went to a Reliant K and MXPX concert in Detroit. So it was a crazy weekend.
Sounds like it.
Drove to Ann Arbor, up to Detroit, back to Ann Arbor, and then got up the next day and drove over to Baldwin in my 2002 Ford Focus. We were the meeting spot for this. The first night, the inaugural night, a bunch of college kids. We're meeting out in the woods, you know, off this back road, down this trail. So I got the Ford Focus just basically four-wheeling down this trail. And rains like a son of a bitch. Gets cold. When I got there, it was 50 degrees and nice. By the time dark set in, we had a fire going. It was down to like 35, and it just started downpouring. Everything got soaked. Everybody was miserable. Nobody had any drinking or, you know, it was basically shut the whole party down. So we got up the next day, and it was cold. It was snowing. We get going on this fishing tournament. We go to the Tippy Dam, and it's my friend Jason and I, a bunch of other dudes fishing there, and we're fishing right off the coffer on the Tippy Dam, and I mean, it's miserable, man. It's cold, it's snowing, it's the middle of winter. I'm standing there in waders I had just bought the week before from Walmart for like 40 bucks, freezing my ass off. I get a bite, hook the fish. I'm standing on a rock, right? Have you ever been to the Tippy Dam?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The guys that fish right there off the coffer, they're standing on rocks there that are covered in algae. So I hook this fish, and I'm excited, I'm fighting it, and all of a sudden I slip, and I'm underwater. And I'm freaking out. Everybody's watching me. You know, I'm the guy that's got the fish on where everybody else is fishing. So I go underwater and got the rod straight up in the air, and I'm fighting this thing, and I get back up and I'm freezing cold. I get it in, and it's like 29 and a half inches. It's a nice steelhead. Throw it on the rope and head right up the hill to the truck, because I am soaking wet, freezing cold. Just, I thought it was bad before. It got a lot worse. So we get back to the lodge, and they're measuring the fish, whatever. There was a 29-inch fish, I believe, that got measured right before mine, and I was freaking out. I didn't know how long my fish was, and they threw mine down. I said, oh, yeah, that one, you know, that's mine, whatever, 29 and a half inches. So I won the tournament. The prize was a guided fishing trip on the Pier Marquette River with any one of the guides from the Pier Marquette Lodge. Anytime I wanted to. Ended up cashing that in sometime around the mid-fall. My buddy Jason and I went up there, spent the night in the lodge, got up the next day on a Saturday, and got a guided fishing trip from the Pier Marquette all the way down to wherever we got out at. But it was awesome. That's the only time I ever fly fished. That's a hell of a backstory to get back to the fly fishing point. And I was awful at it. I was really bad.
So I enjoy fly fishing. My brother and I got into it years ago. I was 13 or 14, and my brother Bobby got into it. So
right.
I was actually working with him during the summer at that time. So, of course, I got me a fly fishing pole, and we started fly fishing on our lunch breaks.
Right, but, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, he taught me how to do it with a phone book. He put a phone book underneath my arm, my armpit there. Said, don't drop it. And keep your forearm straight when you're casting. And he put that book underneath my arm and said, don't drop it. And it only took me about an hour, and I was pretty decent enough where I could go out.
I could cast it fine. I don't know. Maybe I didn't have the right polarized sunglasses on or something. I couldn't tell where my fly hit the water, what it was doing.
Right.
Like, the guide next to me kept telling me what to do. He's like, okay, strip now, strip now. And I'm, okay, I don't know what I'm doing. Sure.
By stripping, he means pull the line to get it tight.
Yeah, strip the line.
The same as, like, reeling it in. Because you don't really use a reel on your fly. You pull a bunch of line out.
Right.
A bunch of slack.
Yep.
And then you pull it back, let it load, and then put it forward, let out a little line, pinch it, pull it back.
Yeah, the fly fishing is basically like...
You're not just whipping it back and forth.
Like my hair. Anyways, yeah, fly fishing is like a controlled... what do you want to call it? Like basically a rope that you're trying to pinpoint.
Yeah, because the fly line... like I had tapered fly line. It was heavy... The real thick line you see isn't what you fish with, obviously. Right. That's to help you cast. So mine was tapered, which meant it was heavier on the end that you tied the actual fishing line to give you some weight to help that load in the rod, so you can cast out a little farther. And there's a bunch of other ways to cast. You can do what they call a roll cast, where it's already on the water, and you just kind of flick your wrist. And
yeah, there's all sorts of, like,
all kinds of fancy shit.
People that fly fish are like people that bow hunt, just... I think fly fishing is a little more intricate. It's a little more...
You feel everything. That's why I like it.
Yeah.
You got a really long rod, and you have that string between your fingers. So every little movement that fish makes you feel.
Right.
That's why I loved it. And you're right. It is comparable to bow hunting. It's like bow hunting of the fishing world, you know?
Yeah. It's like...
Because flies, you're using a tiny fucking hook. You're not using a number six or a number four.
Yeah, they're tiny. All sorts of different flies. There's floaters, there's sinkers, there's streamers, there's mouses. Yeah, nymphs. All sorts of different stuff. And the idea is that you're taking this incredibly small hook and having, like, pinpoint accuracy with where you want to throw it. Guys that are really good at fly fishing, you know, usually have, like, the glasses they can see in the water. They know where the fish are that they want to get to, and you have to make just the right cast at just the right time with just the right presentation. The current of the water, the depth of the water, the depth of the fish, the weight of your fly, the weight of your line, the weight of your leader, because you don't tie the fly line right to the hook on the fly. You actually have, like, a long leader that you use out of monofilament or...
Yep, mm-hmm.
So it's a much more involved process to be a successful fly fisherman. Like, anybody can pick up a Bassmaster, you know, a Zebco 44 reel, push the button, whip it out there, and, you know, or a spinning rod, easy to use, nothing wrong with it, but fly fishing is a lot more.
And you'll notice I've noticed with fly fishing guys anyway, you know, those little, it's a bobber. It's a fucking bobber. It's a thing you wrap around your line, but they always strike indicator. That's what they always call it, a strike indicator.
Right.
They refuse to call it a bobber. It's like, it doesn't make you less cool, dude.
Because a bobber is what your 4-year-old uses on the end of their Mickey Mouse reel they got from Walmart. So
it's like, you're not less cool because you're using a bobber, dude.
A strike indicator.
Right. I just think that's hilarious. Like, because when me and Bobby were fishing in Colorado, we were on vacation. I was still in high school. And this cabin we were staying at the bottom of the cabin, they had three stocked trout ponds.
Awesome.
Right. And that was actually right when we were in the middle of our little fly fishing adventures.
Right.
We brought them with, and we went down there. And we bought these, quote, strike indicators. And it's like, we said the word bobber in the tackle shop, and everybody's like, what?
Yeah.
Are you,
How dare you?
Right. Get out. Get out now.
Fuck out of here.
We don't. You guys aren't from around here, are you?
But yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. I actually have an old fly rod. I haven't busted that thing out in years, but I want to get on that more this year. Definitely.
Yeah, the one time I did it, it was fun. I actually, my friend Jason caught, I think he caught one or two steelhead right towards the end of the trip. He was a lot better at it than I was, and he seemed to pick up on it a lot better than I did. Towards the end of the trip, I actually did hook a nice female.
I don't mean to interrupt it, but even hooking them is a bitch.
Because, no, man.
Because of them small hooks, like we said, that's what makes
it so much different.
Because trout throw. They throw their heads back. And
right.
Forth.
When you, it's weird, you don't set the hook necessarily. You have to let them take it and then just raise the rod up sort of to let the line come taut. And just let the line coming taut is what's supposed to set the hook. I'm used to bass fishing or cat fishing where you feel the thump.
Snapping it.
Yeah, you know, you reel down on it. You feel them eating it. You make sure they got it in their mouth. And then you reef back on that son of a bitch just to bury it as deep as you can.
Right.
And this is not the way that you fly fish.
Are there barbs on fly hooks? I just thought about that.
I believe there are. Maybe not on all of them, I'm sure, but
I just know that, man, they throw the hook all the time.
That's because the hook is so small.
Right,
you have such a limited area to actually get that hook into.
But that's what makes it so exciting.
Exactly,
fly fishing, when you're bringing in that rainbow and he's coming up out of the water, flopping, throwing his head, and then you lose it, you're still like, that was fucking cool.
Yeah, well, it's cool. Like, even on the big lake, when you hook a steelhead, you'll be watching.
Which is a rainbow trout, right?
Right, correct. A rainbow trout is a steelhead, but a Yes, and a steelhead is a rainbow trout, but a rainbow trout is not necessarily a steelhead.
Can you expand on that?
Maybe I'm thinking of Skamania. Never mind. Skamania are a version of the rainbow trout that come in the summertime into the cool water creeks in our area. When the river water gets really hot, the Skamania come into the creeks that have the cold fresh water coming out of them. And they stack up, and that is a completely different topic for another time.
Oh, yeah. We'll
summer steelhead fishing. But a steelhead doesn't necessarily have to be a Skamania, but every Skamania is going to be a steelhead, if that makes sense. It's not every steelhead that reacts the way that they do. But when you hook one in the summertime, you want to talk about fish dancing, fish jumping, man. You hook a steelhead in the cold water where they're fresh, full of energy, and that thing gets out in the river in the hot water and just leaps, bounds, backflips, just the whole everything.
It's a trip, dude.
Yeah.
It's a trip. I mean,
it's awesome.
Fly fishing, even catching panfish, sunfish, bluegill.
Bluegill.
Crappie, that's a fucking blast.
I think pound for pound, bluegill are probably the best fighting fish in the water.
They're fighting with their whole... I mean, every fish fights with its whole body, I guess. But, I mean, just the way they're shaped, it just seems like they have that power to...
You ever hook a pound and a half bluegill or a 2 pound bluegill?
Man,
that is awesome. And if a bluegill ever got to be 10 or 15 pounds, there'd be people chasing them. There'd be TV shows about it. There'd be it would be so ridiculous.
It'd be just as big as the bass craze.
Yeah, yeah.
Or so we got a mutual friend.
Rick Morrison.
Yeah, yeah, he bass, he's sponsored.
Awesome. Yeah, my dad had a friend in this town, actually, Sean Rigglesworth. He was a bass fisherman for a while. I think he had a sponsorship for a couple of years.
Now, that's usually just largemouth, right?
No smallmouth, just
largemouth tournaments. Smallmouths are fun to catch, man.
Yeah. Some of my favorite memories growing up, when I was 15, we'd go up to Mottville. They got the river that runs through Mottville there, and you'd park right at the bridge, wear swimming trunks, and get in with a 7.5 foot bass rod, and we'd fish lead head jigs with a watermelon, a squid skirt sort of.
Can you grab a beer, please?
And you just wade up and down the river catching smallmouth all day long, man.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun. Smallmouth bass are...
Yeah, you want to talk about the difference between a smallmouth and a largemouth other than the size of their mouth?
Yeah, dude. Smallmouth prefer more of a moving water scenario, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They can survive in ponds, but they really thrive in rivers.
And they have the pattern on them is different, too.
Yeah. Besides just the fact that a smallmouth has a smaller mouth than a largemouth, the coloration is a little bit darker, where a largemouth will be black, green, striped, vertically striped down the side. A smallmouth will be more of a golden, sort of a greenish bronze color to it.
Now, I just thought about this. Because you just said, you know, they smallmouths prefer currents, like rivers.
Right.
I wonder if that's got a lot to do with the camouflage.
And that could be, you know, yeah.
Because they are predators under there.
Especially up in Montville.
They'll eat other fish.
When we were fishing up there, you'd be wading through, like, waist-deep water, three and a half, 4 foot deep, and you'd be fishing into, like, stands of really thick, really wavy river grass. Whatever it was, yeah. The weeds, whatever. But there'd be just pockets of weeds on the shallower spots where the weeds would grow, and that's where the smallmouth would hide. You know, it would make sense, I guess, to have that different coloration.
Well, I mean, what I mean by that, too, is, you know, like a lake, the water's, I would guess, would be a lot clearer than it would be in a river with a current it's stirring up all that sediment on the bottom,
yeah.
Hence the darker coloration.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It makes sense.
You know, yeah, while I was listening to you talk about that.
I agree with you. Stands to reason.
Yeah, we definitely need to make sure we get out there this summer. What we need to start doing is when our kids have these tournaments is try to, you know, maybe get out ahead of the gate there and look for spots we could go fishing down there. I say down there because a lot of these tournaments are in Indiana, so it would take an out-of-state fishing license, which really isn't that expensive. I think it's like $35.
Yeah, it's worth it if you're going to spend some time down there. If you fish more than once or twice, it doesn't take very much water to hold fish. You know, if you're going to these tournaments in whatever town, there might be a creek somewhere that you could set up on and, you know, drift a number 7 hook with a hunk of redworm on it and some split shot and see what you can catch, you know.
Remember last year we went, we had a situation like that. We had a tournament down by Warsaw.
Yeah.
So we got a campsite and we were planning on fishing, doing, you know, just some basic bluegill fishing while we're down there in between tournaments. Right.
Right.
Well, the fucking campground we were staying at was off of Pike Lake.
Yeah.
So if there's pike in the fucking lake, that's all there's going to be in the lake. So.
Right. Yeah.
Bluegill fishing didn't work out so well. dumbass. I can't. I remember. Anyway, so but yeah, we definitely need to try to do that this year. Try to plan ahead a little bit better.
Making more time to do more fishing, to do more hunting, to be outdoors more is never a bad idea.
And that goes for you fuckers too. Get your kids up, man. Get them off the couch. Get out there and look for some sheds. The weather's perfect right now. Get out there before the ticks and the leaves. And
shed hunting right now is hot. Get out there. There's no flies. There's no mosquitoes. There's no bees.
You got to beat the squirrels to them.
Right.
Squirrels will take them up chew on them for the calcium.
Squirrels are hot right now. Between the squirrels and the mice, if you find a shed, you're actually really lucky. They're not that common, but they're a lot of fun to look for. It's a good exercise. It's a good excuse to get out of the house.
Which is weird they're so uncommon, goddammit, because you think of how many deer there are out there.
Right. Yeah, because I know I haven't killed a lot of bucks.
Right. But, you know, you think that there should be everywhere, but those squirrels get on them, dude.
Yeah, they don't. They usually don't stay on the ground long. Between squirrels, coyotes will pick them up just to chew on them. You know, my dogs love chewing on antlers.
Porcupines.
Yeah, you know, up north, porcupines are rough on things. So,
yep. Well, on that note, I think we're gonna wrap this up. All right, guys. We'll talk to you next time on the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right, boys and girls, that is it. Join us in 2 weeks for episode 9. Where you not only get to hear how our turkey season went, you will also get to hear from Chuck Gooding, who is a turkey nut. The dude is 3/4 of the way to his grand slam. Well, he was when he sat down and talked to us. He was heading out to Wyoming the next morning at 6 a.m. to go hunt Miriam's on Devil's Tower. So that was a great interview. I think you guys are going to love that. In the meantime, look us up at Twitter at RFF Podcast, on Facebook at Raxfur and Feathers, not N like the podcast. Shoot us an email, raxfurandfeathers@gmail.com. Any of you guys got recipes, stories, whatever, throw it at us. All editing done by Kyle Palmotter, and music and artwork done by Shane Yoder from PutThemInASong.com, who also has his own podcast now, The Hood Note, so definitely check that out. And hopefully you guys are having a great time in the woods, doing whatever you're doing, hunting mushrooms, hunting sheds, turkeys, whatever you're doing. Hopefully the guys are having a great time. Get the kids out there, and we'll talk to you next time.